Thank you for joining us on the Fastest Known podcast. In times like this, it's really important to stay connected however we can. This special edition, of course, is going to be quite different. Instead of person to person or on a topic, we're going to talk with three different people from three different parts of the world to get their perspective. We are not epidemiologists, we're not scientists, so instead, we just want to hear from people like ourselves how they are coping, what they're doing, and what the situation is where they live. We're going to start with France, Barceloneta, above Annecy, where the epidemic, of course, is in advance of where it is in the United States, and the mandates and coping mechanisms are also ahead of us. And then we're going to bump back to the United States, a place you have heard of. It's called California, which also led the states in terms of how they responded to the pandemic. Lastly, we're going to go to Christchurch, New Zealand, which is behind in terms of, not behind in other ways, but behind the pandemic curve than the rest of the world, where they actually have a chance to not only flatten the curve, which is what social distancing only does, but to actually contain it. And we'll hear how they're working with it down under. Thanks again for joining us. Well, Hillary, it's so good to talk with you.
I'm glad to be on here. Thanks for asking me to join.
Well, you, of course, the quick bio is you're a long-term ultra runner and the girl who almost died 2.5 years ago. So you also have been living in France for the entire winter. So you have a lot to tell us about how things are going in France. So you're there right now. What does it look like?
Yeah. So actually, it's been quite a big change. I've lived on and off in France for, I don't know, the past 5 years, ever since I started racing ultra marathons. I always found myself in somewhere in France for several months at a time. And so I finally just decided to flip-flop. So my idea was to spend the winter in France. I use it as a home base and then come back for some spring races in the States and then come back to France for the summer. Like this year, a big goal of mine is UTMB. We'll talk about this later if it's like pending, maybe going to happen or not. But yeah, France has been great. Learning French. That's a really good mental challenge. We've had kind of a dry winter here. Actually, right now I'm in the south of France, near this village called Barcelonnette. It's this wonderful valley. It's pretty close to the Italian Alps and also to Marseille as well. But it's in this beautiful valley, and there's 3,000 meter peaks on all sides. So this has been where I've gotten in some pretty good skiing. And I'm based actually currently in Annecy, which is kind of like the Boulder of France, except it has I guess Boulder does have a big reservoir as well, but there's a huge lake in Annecy. And, it's kind of like the outdoor capital of France. It's been wonderful, you know, trying to hone in which French bakery I like the best. you know, it's like a daily routine here.
That sounds terrific. It sounds like living the life, as they say, but life as we know it has just changed. It's changed dramatically for everyone all over the world. And France has been ahead of the United States. I should say Europe has been way ahead. And there's a lot of restrictions been imposed, and I think they're valid up to some degree, because social distancing is mandatory, really, in terms of, you know, stemming a pandemic. So what restrictions are in place in France right now?
Yeah, so that's actually been really interesting to watch. Of course, we've all been hearing about the coronavirus since, end of November, early December, when the outbreak kind of started happening in China. But it was funny, 3-4 weeks ago, I was here in Barcelonnette on a vacation, skiing, and this is right when Italy started to get really bad. And so Italy kind of set the precedent. They're one of like the epicenters in Europe. So they actually closed their borders, and they were the first ones to implement like a quarantine, like a pretty strict quarantine, where literally they were saying, okay, like no one's allowed to leave their house. Like you can only go out to get groceries and, you know, they were even limiting like outdoor activity, like skiing was prohibited, all this stuff. And everyone around France and even neighboring European countries were like scoffing. They're like, oh, this won't happen. Like, we're not going to have to do that. And lo and behold, it was a short 2 weeks later that President Macron came and said that, okay, like, we have to stop the spread of the virus. And he implemented like the first thing of, they first started canceling events like the Paris Marathon and half marathon, gatherings of more than 5,000, 1,000 people. Then it was things of like 100 people or more were kind of prohibited. Then he took the next step. This happened over the course of like literally like days, like every day there were new rules. And so then basically, this is Monday of last week. So what is the date today? The 23rd of March. So the 18th of March is when, the president said, okay, President of France, he said, okay, we're going to shut non-essential businesses. So everything needs to be closed because basically there's just too many people congregating everywhere. And, yeah. So, and you know, I think big cities, like, I mean, big European cities where people are on top of one another, like they're very, very efficient with their space is one of the things I love about living in Europe. However, that poses a problem when there's, you know, an infectious disease. And so, on Monday, he said all non-essential businesses are closed. And then literally the next day is when he was like, look, this isn't like people are still out. They're not paying attention to social distancing. And we started this quarantine. And so that was last Tuesday, the 19th. Fast forward to today, the confinement restrictions are so severe that the fine went up from 35 euros to 600 euros if you are more than 500 meters from your house.
Wow. Okay, so that's the update. And I think the reports that are coming in from Europe are that over the weekend, things just ratcheted down another level. Yeah. And I should pause here and quick note that right now it is 9 a.m. Mountain Daylight Time in Colorado on Monday. Mm-hmm. And so this podcast, we're hoping to get out on a rush production schedule on Wednesday. By the time people are listening to this on Wednesday, the situation actually will have changed.
Yes.
And so I want to make a note of when we're having this conversation. So yeah. Right now, it's been cranked down to a 600 euro fine in France for being 500 meters away from your house. That's strict.
It's very strict. And I think actually it's more strict in big cities like Marseille and Paris. And so I'm getting this information from, so this is in Annecy. So it's a bigger city. And the reason why they're so strict in this region, so Annecy and Chamonix are kind of in the same region. It's the prefecture 74, which is basically just a region, the Haute-Savoie. Pretty much every ultra runner should know about this because, you know, UTMB, this is like the region that like literally the TDS, Tour des Ducs de Savoie. Does that sound familiar? So, yeah. It's this region of France where there, it's an epicenter of the virus outbreak in France. So it's Haute-Savoie and Paris are some pretty, bad regions. And so that's where the rules are the most strict. So, where I am a little bit further south, basically all non-essential businesses are closed all around France, but I'm kind of self-secluded in this little mountain town, like in a cabin. They're literally my nearest neighbor. They're 2 kilometers away. So I can go a little bit more than 500 meters from my house. However, all like skiing or basically they've prohibited hiking, mountain biking, skiing, in all of this region just because they don't want to, you know, basically there's no emergency staff available to help you if you have an accident. And so even though maybe my region is not as strict, I'm still keeping it pretty safe. I literally have a bike trainer that I've been training on the deck of my cabin and, you know, doing little runs, but nothing crazy, because literally if something happened, you're kind of SOL. And the place where I'm here in France, basically there's no hospital in this valley. So if there was an outbreak, say in Barcelonnette, and you know, you can extrapolate this or use it to as an example for any small, like rural community, in the United States, that if they don't have a hospital nearby and there's an outbreak in that town, you know, that could cause a real problem. The nearest hospital here is an hour away. So I think that's one of the reasons why there's such a strict, quarantine kind of procedure going on here, just to enforce that social distancing aspect.
Right. Well, again, you're ahead of the United States, and the prediction models say that's where we're going.
Yeah.
Of course, the United States has an extraordinarily poor healthcare system and was extraordinarily unprepared. And so what we see is the number of cases actually are the number of confirmed cases, which is barely related to the actual number of cases. So this is an important conversation for us to have and for us to hear about, because it's pretty sure that we're going to be where you are here basically in a week.
Yeah, and that's I kind of think where the model is trending. I mean, certain states, I know California is already kind of on that non-essential businesses closed, even parts of Colorado as well. There's no strict limitation on movement at the moment, but I know as of this weekend, actually in California, like in Marin, like a lot of the national parks and the forests have been closed to, again, prevent that social distancing. Enforce the social distancing.
Correct. That's where we get into this interesting little teasing it apart aspect, because on one hand, running and exercise outdoors is scientifically demonstrated to be the absolute best thing for your mental, physical, and emotional health. This is literally a fact. And exercise improves your immune system. But what happens is people congregate.
Yeah,
and they can't do that. So they're kind of throwing the baby out with the bathwater by necessity. So, for example, they closed state parks in Oregon over the weekend. And it's true. It's actually not a bad thing to do, because people were flocking to the state parks and they were not keeping the 6-foot distance.
Yeah. And, you know, it's something that, just as a scientist, like, I mean, I have a master's degree in neuroscience. Like, I understand the cognitive benefits, mentally, emotionally, and obviously physically of running and being active. And it's proven that moderate exercise, I really don't know if me or, you know, ultra runners fall into the category of moderate exercise. However, moderate exercise is proven to enhance and boost your immune system, right? So, at first, there's this rule, of course, like, okay, we could go out to exercise by your home. But more people were basically in France were just abusing that and still kind of congregating. So that's why they made it more and more strict. But I agree. It's kind of like it's catch 22. It's a double-edged sword. There's, running and exercising is extremely beneficial to your health. But if people don't respect the rules and don't do it in groups, and it's really hard to draw that line, right? Like, as a government, as you're trying to implement rules, like, how can you, if you have all of these exceptions, you know, people aren't really going to respect it. So there's really no point in passing anything anyways. It's really hard because, you know, I'm having trouble here, even though I'm confined in this beautiful cabin and I have like limited places to run. I can still run here. But I still feel a little bit of this, you know, like you're trapped. You almost feel like something has been taken away from you. And it's hard, especially in the moment when, you know, as athletes, events are being canceled and postponed and we don't know when they're actually going to happen again. And I had this huge lull in motivation, like, oh, what the heck? And then I didn't want to, you know, respect the rules of what's going on here. But then it's kind of when you have a moment to breathe and the reason why we're doing this is because it's, you know, trying to work as a, like, basically we're, our actions, we need to be less selfish and think of like the bigger picture, think of the bigger community and the health of, you know, the United, our state, our community, the world. So it's much bigger than us. And I think sometimes it's hard to accept those changes when they feel so, you know, they feel so disruptive to your daily life and your routine and something that is so important and like vital to your everyday life.
Right. Right. Well, Hillary, that's a terrific point, which I want to just emphasize right here, which is, on one hand, this is way bigger than your personal goals, anyone's personal goals. And of course, I should also note, no one would ever accuse you of being moderate. So we'll just put that one aside.
And so we'll just go
right here to that. What you just said is that the pandemic is way more important than any personal goals, any sense of restriction, et cetera, et cetera. But then at the same time, exercise is literally good for your health, and health is what we're trying to protect. And so we have to have, so we have to draw this very careful line here where social distancing is the real deal, and it is the only tool we have right now. There is not going to be a vaccination. There's not, and there will be at some point, but in the near future, that's not going to happen. There's not going to be a cure. Basically, the hospitals will get overwhelmed, so you have to social distance. Yeah. So this is thank you, Hillary. That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
And you're up there 2 kilometers from the nearest person, so you can go out there and just, you know, kind of run around the cabin a little bit, and that's okay. But like you say, if you're living in Paris, you can't even do that.
No, and so that's why I've tried to be just, like, respectful. Like, I can, you know, and just because, again, like, it's bigger than me. I understand that. And I mean, it's another complication that, you know, me as a foreigner in France, I mean, I'm legally able to be here. I have a French visa. I have all the documentation. However, you know, if I don't speak French fluently and I was stopped by the police, like, you literally have to have a permission slip to leave the house. It's like basically tells you your address and like where you're, if you're going to A, the pharmacy, B, the grocery store, if you're going out for like a exercise, like it says like, like something for health, like around your neighborhood. And then the fourth is, you know, if it's basically designated work, if you can, if you work in the hospital or as a journalist or, you know, at a grocery store, like then you can go to work. And then the fifth thing is if you have to go to the government offices or anything. But unless you have a permission slip, you know, you basically can't be, if you're stopped, you're fined. And me as a foreigner here, it's like I have to be even more careful. So that's kind of where I wanted to be less selfish. And it's like if pretty much everyone else can't run, like then why, you know, why should I? So, I can, you know, hike. There's still snow. I mean, where there's like, I can go maybe a kilometer from my house and run into snow. So it's, you know, it's pretty limited, but again, I have the bike trainer. I can kind of, I'm learning how to cook a whole bunch of different things here and pass the time reading a bunch. It's kind of like a benefit off season that, you know, we do, like everyone is getting, and you know, it's in this sport of ultra running, it just goes, so we never really get a time for a break anyways. But I mean, one other thing I wanted to add too is that, I mean, this personally affects me. I was supposed to actually be on a plane last week to come home to Colorado, and I decided to not take it because I could have left before the travel ban. But I decided not to because I thought it was my social duty to, stay here because there could be some chance that if I could bring it back to Colorado, even if I didn't have any symptoms, I didn't want to be responsible for that. And again, my parents are in great health, but, they're, you know, my dad's 75 and my mom's 65. So, you know, like I wouldn't want to, I wanted to like keep my social distance. So maybe mine's a little bit extreme. Again, thank you, Buzz. I am not moderate. So my interpretation of social distancing is basically, you know, a whole ocean away from everyone. But yeah.
Gotcha. It's interesting. What's a good perspective there, Hillary? Yeah. I was going to ask you that. So basically you passed on the opportunity to come back to the States a week ago, which means you're going to be there for the next 2 months.
Pretty much, because if the U.S. is a week behind France, you know, who knows? Like, I mean, basically, in France we've started at 2 weeks of quarantine, and I love in like you know the English language quarantine. It sounds like really severe, right? Quarantine. It's like you're like in a sterile environment. I think of like bubble suits and everything, and in French, the word is like much more like light. It's really funny. They don't use like quarantine, but so we're at 2 weeks here, but that's a really likely to change. Italy, they're kind of going on their fourth week, I believe. April 2nd is when they can. Their quarantine is said to lift. Again, they have to kind of see how the situation is and reevaluate it from there. But I think they started with 2 weeks. Same with Spain. And then at that 2 week mark, they're going to reevaluate it if they want it to be longer or end it there. I honestly think it's going to be longer. I think it's probably going to be a full 4 weeks. And then we'll see it from there. So, you know, but that means ending quarantine, and then you don't know when it's safe to travel, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Well, here it's called shelter in place. The word quarantine isn't used for the most part, unless people have the virus, and then quarantine's different. So report from France, Spain and Italy and Andorra are equally as strict. And I've heard that I've been told that the fine in Andorra is 3,000 euros. So it's not 500. And that it's gotten a little grim. Some of the reports I've gotten in that people, there's social media and mass media shaming. And it's kind of, you could say it's dark times there. So you're up in the mountains. So good for you. Germany is a little more relaxed right now. The report in this morning from Germany is that new rules, of course, this weekend, and you are able to go outside, but not in a group larger than two. And so solo running, cycling, and walking is still allowed in Germany. So, again, this is actively changing all the time. And before I looked, before I contacted you, of course, I had to just take a quick look-see to see what Hillary is up to. And so I went on your Strava feed and went, wow, look at that. She's doing these huge bike rides. Look at this 65-mile bike ride. And look at this. And she, whoa, wait a minute. This one is around New York City. And I took a closer look at that. So, yeah, you're sitting there on your porch and you're on Zwift.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm doing all these rides. So yeah, but exactly. I'm doing virtual rides.
Right. So I did this little double take going, wow, man, she's crushing it. I guess you still are. But that's kind of where this conversation has to go right now is that, again, just to say it for the umpteenth time, social distancing is for real. Everybody needs to do it. And so but exercise is good. So the indoor thing is taking off, the indoor bike, the virtual trainers. In the United States, what really got going is a big run on uphill skiing because they closed the ski areas in Colorado. Thank goodness, early on. Yeah. But so people are buying skins and going up, and treadmills are probably selling out as well.
Yeah, I know. My first bike sponsor, Saris, I got a trainer and I had been using them this winter because I ride a bike outside less because, you know, in humid conditions, humid and cold, it's pretty brutal to ride a bike. So I was using the trainer and thank goodness I have it because I can take it with me and, it's actually pretty enjoyable. So it's been nice to do that. I'm going to hopefully, you know, it's like butt conditioning. So I'm going to have like a strong butt for all the bike races that I want to do. But, Buzz, I actually had a question there because, I mean, people have been asking me about, you know, whether they think certain events, you know, for instance, Lavaredo at the end of June and UTMB, if they are in fact going to have these races and, you know, they haven't made an official call yet. But, you know, since we've already seen certain races be canceled, at least in Colorado through the end of April, I mean, we're both registered for a Dirty Kanza, a bike race the end of May. Is there any news on your end about what events have been canceled thus far?
Great. I was going to ask you if you thought you and I were going to be riding together at DK this year. And I think no. I don't think we will be. And actually, due to my recent shoulder surgery, I couldn't have kept up with you anyway. But I think what they're going to probably do is move that into the fall. It'd be my guess.
I think that would be cool. I mean, it's basically just shifting the whole year. And again, it feels tough. I mean, I know, you know, and actually, Buzz, I was thinking of you because even with all of these events canceled, You know what this means? It's going to be the year of the FKT. Everyone is going to be going after FKTs. So get ready.
Well, actually,
you're
going to
have so many admissions, like a new projects. You're going to have so many. I'm going to do my part, Buzz. I'm actually, the Sierra High Route, I thought I was going to have to choose between doing the UTMB and Sierra High Route. But probably because UTMB is going to be pushed back, I'm going to go for the Sierra High Route.
There you go. And look at that. Yeah. You have the courage to announce it publicly. So that means other ladies are going to go, oh, she's going to do it. I better go do it first. But
all
just
right,
kidding.
Sweet.
Just kidding. It could be definitely the FKT action has picked up dramatically. We're trying to figure out how to deal with it because we're getting deluged with roots and FKTs coming in, which we appreciate because FKTs by nature are solitary events. And so it's the one sort of pseudo competitive thing that one can do outside. Yeah. And boy, you're probably not, depending on what you do, of course, but a lot of the backcountry, like SHR, Sierra High Route, the 6 foot distance is going to be very easy. It's more like 6 mile distance from people.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think it's just a good reminder. At least this is what I keep telling myself, because I felt this huge lull in motivation when kind of all this was crashing down, was that it's a nice time to just like reboot and reset and, you know, dream of events that you want to do, whether that's races or dream of routes that you want to do. You know, like once it's safe to travel, you know, figure out and explore the national parks again in the United States. You know, here there's so many things in France. You know, I could link up some really cool mountain chains here. There's a ton of rounds that I could do, you know, in England or Ireland. So I think it's really cool. It's like we have now time to kind of, you know, to dream and to kind of write new goals and set new expectations for this year when it's safe. But again, just for the years to come.
Good call, Hillary. That's a very positive note. You are known for that. Everyone really appreciates hearing the positive note because you know, the world has changed. I mean, you've got to just start with that, and you have to use some adjective like it will be brutal. So I think that's our starting – we reset to that, right? And now we're adjusting to that. How do you make that come out the best? We mentioned DK and UTMB. The Olympics aren't going to happen.
You know, it's weird that they're still
talking about it, but it's a non-starter. It literally can't happen. It's not like, because of Japan. Japan's good. If you want to hold the Olympics, Japan is where you want to do it because they're buttoned up. But it's illegal to train. So the whole thing is a farce. So I don't know why they're even discussing it. It can't happen because it's literally illegal for athletes in most sports to train.
Exactly. And that's also why I was thinking here, I was like, okay, if Olympians literally can't train, then I should just like kind of chill out. So it's crazy. I think what I've been talking about here is that it's really going to be like life before coronavirus and life after. Like, I think it's going to be a pretty drastic change, not only like just with this year, but also just like economically and things like this. But I mean, I even started this episode before we're recording, just talking about how this almost felt reminiscent of an injury. And I know through a lot of experience, I mean, you know, you introduced me as the woman who nearly died. Those experiences, I learned a lot. And it's during those periods where you can, again, use it as an opportunity to learn, become stronger, become different. And it's kind of like a little, almost reminiscent of an injury period that everyone gets to, you know, dig deep. And it's not always the most enjoyable, but
Good call, Hillary. I think we'll leave it on that note. I appreciate your positive outlook there. It's like an injury period. Dig deep, reset, dream about what you can and can't do. Thank you very much. And I look forward to staying in touch.
Yeah, thanks so much, Buzz. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Part 2 of the Fastest Known podcast. We're back in the United States, and I'm talking with Monica Morant. Welcome, Monica.
Hi, Buzz.
Always good to talk with you. Now, a lot of people know who you are. You've been at Hard Rock 100 many times, Leadville Trail 100, and you're mainly a triathlete yourself, plus a few ultras, and also you're a sales representative for the New Balance Shoe Company.
That is correct.
And that's got to have a big impact. So right now we're talking to you in Sausalito, California. So there's a few things here. California was the first state in the United States to kind of clamp down a little bit. But even before that, the Bay Area clamped down. So what's the situation look like from your perspective?
Yeah, so the first order or mandate went into place last Monday, the 16th, and that wasn't even on the state and governor level yet. That was a county mandate ordered by Mayor London Breed of San Francisco, which affected six of the nine local Bay Area counties. So that was the first shutdown on Monday. At the time, work-wise, that was about 16 of my 22 accounts were forced to shut down that Monday. And then later other counties rolled out, and by Friday, the state mandate came down. So all 22 of my accounts had closed down. And yeah, we are on a shelter in place order up here.
Now, California tends to lead the nation in politics and culture and other ways. So wonder if California is leading the nation again.
Yeah. I mean, given what we just don't know and the resources we don't have out there in place in terms of testing and so forth, this was a call that I suppose really had to be made. And we're a major metropolitan area up here. So the potential for spread is really quick. And so this call had to be made, and California was the first one to make it.
Now, what does shutdown mean? So the stores are closed, which is super harsh. We'll talk about that in a minute. People not only are losing their paychecks, but they can't pay rent. We'll get into that. But I think people are still allowed to go outside and recreate, even though businesses are closed.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I see on social media people sort of mistakenly using the term quarantine. Quarantine assumes that you know you are positive with the virus, or that you've been exposed to someone, and so you've chosen to, you know, self-quarantine for the what we think are the right appropriate amount of days, which is 14 days. We're in shelter in place, so regardless of whether you know your status or whether you could have been exposed, everybody's being asked to stay home for unless you've got any critical issues to be outside. Stay inside, hunker down, have enough gas and groceries, and just stay in place. So staying at home. However, that doesn't restrict us from being outside. And the other common term that we're hearing a lot right now is social distancing. So we can be outside. Doesn't restrict us from being outside on our local bike paths and trails, but we're still observing social distancing, which means, you know, aside from people in your own household, you want to stay a good 6 feet in distance from anybody else. So that creates an interesting sort of bit of frogger on my local bike path here. I try to get up earlier in the morning to run, but by about 10 a.m., the parents who are with their very active kids are now out on the bike path, and it's getting crowded.
Now, this is interesting because many parts of the country, Colorado, the restaurants and bars were ordered to close, except for takeout, a key point. Support your local bar and restaurant by doing takeout. They were closed, but none of the other businesses here are closed. But in the Bay Area, almost all non-essential businesses are closed?
Yeah. So obviously we've got our grocery stores and restaurants that can facilitate takeout. So that again follows the social distancing rules. They're allowing people to come in one at a time or stand in line 6 feet apart to pick up to-go orders. So no eating in communal space in the restaurant. And that serves people who maybe don't have the wherewithal to have 2 weeks worth of groceries at home. They're still able to eat. They're still able to support their local restaurants as well. We're all trying to support each other in that way. So yeah, we can go to the grocery store. The lines are, most grocery stores are keeping a line outside, keeping people 6 feet apart in that line, and then allowing maybe, depending on the size of the grocery store, you know, our local Trader Joe's is allowing 20 people in at a time. They're disinfecting the cart for you when they hand it to you, being, you know, as mindful as we can about any way that we can transmit this to each other, but we still need to get our groceries. Essential things like bike shops, mechanics, and of course, any critical doctor's visits and so forth.
Oh, bike shops are open.
Bike shops are open. Yeah. Considered critical, I guess. They're essential. And in if you need your mode of transportation repaired, although there's not any place really to go right now.
I see. Now, this is voluntary, so people are not receiving fines or tickets, things like that?
So far, I've not heard of anybody receiving fines. The issue is that shelter in place is, you know, a pretty broadly interpreted term. And the issue we're now seeing is, for instance, at our beaches, you know, over the weekend, and it's understandable, families with young children, they're so active, they're so antsy, and they want to get outside. But beaches have been overcrowded. For instance, out here in West Marin, Point Reyes beaches were crowded. And then those people are stopping in town at those small towns on their way back to buy what's considered essential groceries, but they're from out of town and could potentially, you know, be spreading the virus. So parking lots have now been closed. Essentially, the spaces are open, but you know, driving from an hour away to come anyplace else just is not considered sheltering in place.
Good. So I think that's an appropriate way to approach it.
Yeah, it has to be done, unfortunately.
Well, that's a good example you just gave there, which is great. Point Reyes National Seashore, it's huge. You could disperse there pretty easily, but people are going to stop in these tiny grocery stores on the way. And while they normally like the business, they don't really want you coming in anymore. They want to serve their locals, but not necessarily people coming from the big city.
Exactly. And we've seen that, you know, from what I understand now, you know, Sasha and I, we had a plan to take our vacation, you know, up to 2 months ago. We were still thinking about Italy, but we were getting word as we still hadn't booked our flights. And that quickly changed to, oh, let's do a road trip. We'll head out to the Southwest. We'll go to Moab, you know, just hop in the van and, you know, stop along the way, camp where we want. That's the beauty of having a van. But as it got more serious, we understood that would not be responsible. And as you see in Moab, they're just, they were just overwhelmed with spring breakers who weren't understanding the seriousness of it. And, it depletes them of their own groceries and resources. And then potentially if you're out there, you get in an accident, you need ER, you're taking up a bed that could very well be needed for a ventilator, and anybody that's, in the dangerous throes of this virus.
Moab is an interesting example because, of course, it's a tourist town. They love tourists. Basically, their economy is entirely built on tourists since uranium is no longer mined there. But they took actions in early March. They closed schools for 2 weeks. And then the Moab Regional Hospital only has 17 beds. And so they wrote 17 is not a lot. They wrote a strongly worded letter to their governor, Herbert, and said, close it, do it now. And so
lodging, everything shut down.
It's shut down. And that was quite controversial. I have a friend in Moab, and we were going to have a nice podcast conversation just like this one. But this person declined, did not want to speak on the record. And I can't blame this person. Just think about it.
Yeah.
They could say, yes, definitely need to close this down because otherwise we're making the community, our community, unsafe. But that means half of this person's friends are out of work. I mean, out of work.
Yeah.
There is no paycheck because they're hourly workers. Or they could say, yeah, let people come. But then the other half are going to say, oh, that's terrible. I got kids in school. And this we can't handle a pandemic in our small town. So it's very controversial. They declined to speak online.
Yeah, it's, you know, the truth is there's what I'm understanding of this all, you know, in contacting my 22 accounts both that Monday and every day since as often as I can to let them hear my voice. And you know, I just want to check in with everybody. But what I've discovered is there's no right response to this, you know, and everybody's doing the best they can in terms of our government, in terms of our governors, mayors and so forth. They're making the best call for public safety and public health. And unfortunately that supersedes, our incomes, at this point. And I guess the only thing that's really comforting is just knowing that we are all being hit by this in one way or the other. So we've all got to do our part to get out of it together.
Right. Right. And, you're so correct, Monica. It supersedes anything else. People say, I've been training for months. Well, okay. People's lives are in danger.
Go easy on our race directors right now.
That's for sure. Thank you for that call, because we talk about restaurants, they're in trouble, and buying gift certificates, things, the various things that we can do. But race directors, wow, they got zero income. So do you really want to ask for a refund right now? Think twice about that.
You know, again, I no right response, right? But, you know, we're privileged to be registering for races to begin with. And with that comes, regardless of COVID, you know, other acts of God could have canceled a race. And that's just the waiver we sign. And at this point, those race directors have a livelihood. I wouldn't call any of them greedy. We just all got to accept that, you know, a good half of this year is just not going to happen the way we'd planned. And including, you know, we've now heard the Olympics are postponed for a year. Talk about people who've been planning for not just since the last 4 years, but their whole lives for this. And it's that important. It's beyond our personal goals, our national Olympic goals. This is a global pandemic, and that supersedes everything right now.
Excellent. I agree completely. Thank you for saying that. And yet California is seems to me is doing a good job of walking the line, if we shall say, that strong social distancing and closing down non-essential, but still allowing people to go outside and recreate, which in my personal opinion is a good way to do it. It's a good compromise because, as we know, it builds immunity. It builds your health.
Yeah, both physical and mental. You know, I'll be the first to say, running is my Prozac. I've got to do it to be able to just keep a healthy mindset to go on with my job and everything else. So it's about more than just a race too for people. We really need to be out there, staying active and staying healthy.
Right. Well, in the same topic, I could read down the list of organizations that have recommended don't go climbing except to, you know, your local crag or a place that's somewhat dispersed, because people were congregating in Bishop, California. And then the American Alpine Club almost a week ago posted a note saying, don't do it. Don't go there.
Yeah. It's, you know, just you, it's about using common sense. You know, this isn't a national holiday. We're not all meant to just go out and go for it everywhere. Just, you know, if should anything happen, should you require medical assistance or a visit to the ER, again, that's just, should you need search and rescue, that everything is going to deplete our resources going towards flattening this curve, you know? So stay close to home, be safe, but get outside, and we can do it.
Okay. And we can talk to each other virtually. We can have podcasts.
Although I cannot say for certain whether I am wearing pants right now.
Oh, I see. I see. You're right.
This
is not a video call. This is an audio only call, Monica. We do not know what you look like right now. We can leave that to our imagination, can't we?
Yeah, we'll leave it at that.
We'll leave it at that. Well, I do hope I see you again in person, and which I think I will sometime this year.
Likewise, Buzz.
Okay. Well, thank you for taking your time, and take care.
Thanks, Buzz. I just want to end by saying, you know, for as long as I've known you and we've had our friendship, you've been an incredible mentor to me, both professionally in our industry, and a great friend. And anytime I talk to you, it's a calming and you're just a beacon. And it's just great to hear your voice, and I appreciate all that you're doing to get the word out and continue us being excited about Fastest Known Time and everything else while we're in the middle of all this.
Well, thank you very much. That means a lot to me.
You mean a lot to me, Buzz. Thanks for reaching out.
For the third and final component of this special edition podcast, we are going down under to New Zealand, where I'm speaking with Grant Guise. Welcome, Grant. Good to talk with you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me along, Buzz.
Now, you've done Hard Rock 100. How many times have you done it?
Twice.
Twice?
Yep, twice. Was meant to do it last year and was hoping to do it this year, but probably not.
Probably not. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about. But you're down in New Zealand, and we start off in France, the situation there, which is ahead of where we are here in the United States. And then we talked with someone in the Bay Area, where they actually were one of the earliest areas of the United States to clamp down. But now down in New Zealand, you're one of the last, so you're behind everybody else, and you're an island nation with 300 kilometers of blue water all around you. So you actually, and correct me, Grant, you're going to tell me the situation. We're just kind of putting this out here. You almost could close the borders effectively and control and contain everything inside of your borders. You possibly could manage this. Is this how you're seeing it, or how's it going?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm obviously no expert on this subject, but that's kind of the goal, I guess, of the government and everyone in New Zealand. So we actually. Maybe a week and a half ago now, we enforced a 2-week stand down or 2 weeks self isolation, for anyone coming into New Zealand. And then they closed, the borders to anyone that wasn't from New Zealand. So, or a New Zealand resident or, you know, their partner, kids, what have you. And then we went to they came out with a threat level scale, which was a 1-4 scale. And, when we first chatted a few days ago, we're at level 2 and we are currently at level 3 as of about 24 hours ago. And in 24 hours, roughly, we're going to level 4, which is pretty much total lockdown.
Wow.
No. Yeah. So it's escalated like it is for everyone, escalating really quickly. But yeah, like you say, we are kind of behind the rest of the world, and we are we have the advantage of being able to, you know, see what everyone else is doing really well, or maybe see what everyone else isn't doing so well. So we're able to kind of look at that and make decisions based off what's happened in other places. But we're I think we're being pretty aggressive with it. It seems like it, to go from, it's totally closing down. And we're only at 102 or 103 cases as of confirmed cases as of yesterday. But they'll do an announcement here pretty soon, and I'm sure it'll bump up another 30 or so. That seems to be kind of where it's heading.
Right. I should note that the current time in our conversation is 5 p.m. Mountain Daylight Time. That's Denver, Colorado time. Because like you say, Grant, it changes so fast that we might as well note in the podcast what time we're saying this, because people will hear this podcast over the next few days or a week, by which time everything we said has been outdated.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 100 confirmed cases in New Zealand. I mean – they're saying, I think I heard a statistic, if it goes unchecked, it'll double every 5 days. So who knows, what number it'll be at by the time this goes live. But we're pretty fortunate. That's still a low number. There's almost no one in hospital with it. Most people are at home self isolating, no fatalities yet from it. Obviously that could and will change.
Terrific.
For sure.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Now, what does stay at home mean? Is this a request? Is this a mandate? What level is that?
Take it back maybe a notch, which I think is really interesting what people have done in New Zealand, is there was a the two-week self-quarantine. If you came into the country, you had 2 weeks, you had to go self-quarantine. Now, some people aren't doing this, and there's a case of people coming in and just going straight to a backpackers and hanging out with people, and they got arrested and they got deported.
We're playing for keeps, man.
Those people got deported because it was like, hey, this is the go now. And then there was a case, I'm sure you've been down to the West Coast. I think it was on Fox Glacier. It might've been on Franz, big tourist area. And there was a helicopter pilot, and he was flying around with two tourists and, you know, doing a sightseeing thing. And they got chatting and, you know, it came out, oh, we've just arrived in the country. And the helicopter pilot's like, you kidding me? And he just, he flew straight to the police station and drop them off.
Grant, this is an amazing, I'm sorry. This is an amazing conversation because we're hearing, of course, Italy, it's just, they tried to clamp down. They imposed fines for people leaving the house, which actually did not work. So they actually had to have police patrol the streets because they weren't obeying it, right? Yeah. Their own citizens weren't obeying it that well. They're still going to bars and things like that. So it literally went out of control. Now, here we are in New Zealand, and the helicopter pilot didn't even take him back to the parking lot. He just flew right to the parking lot at the police station, say, here you go.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, but, you know, there are a couple of cases. You know, Sunday I was driving out of town to go for a run. We're at threat level two. We're supposed to be social distancing. And, you know, I drove through past a couple of cafes and people are packed in there. And that was actually pretty disappointing to see. And I admit, like myself, a few nights earlier, to kind of drown my sorrows somewhat from a race being canceled, which I know is really nothing in the big picture of what's going on. But I was down in Wanaka. I was supposed to do a race, and a buddy came around to where we were camping, and he's like, well, I'm going to go get a beer, and there'll be no one there. You know, I'm going to support this local bar, and we'll sit outside. And we got there, and it was packed. And it was actually pretty uncomfortable being there, to be honest, in this tourist town.
Yes.
And afterwards I left and I kind of regretted, you know, going and having a beer, sitting with these people. I was like, man, can't believe I'm regretting socializing, but I did. And so I am really happy that they've gone to this threat level four, that they are, essentially locking down, you know, no, unessential travel. Supermarkets are open. And you know, we've had like everyone panic buying. It sounds like our supply chains are pretty good as far as that stuff. Shelves are empty because people are buying so much at once that the supermarket can't keep the shelves stocked. Like they physically can't put the stock on the shelves fast enough. So I think our supply chain.
Grant, I have to ask you a question here. So what are people panic buying? What products?
Well, toilet paper seems to be.
Oh, my gosh. I was hoping you were not going to say that. It's the same thing here. It's toilet paper.
Yeah.
I was hoping you were going to say something more helpful, something more efficacious.
Yeah. Running shoes. Oh, well. No. it's been toilet paper, unfortunately. And then first it was toilet paper, and then it was hand sanitizer, which we don't produce here. And I guess there's a worldwide shortage. So that's been pretty tricky. And then rice, oats, like a lot of oats, like all the oats went, all the flour went. The strangest one that I seen was I think canned peaches. I'm not sure why, but canned peaches. It was kind of bizarre. And the flour is an interesting one. I'm like, what are people doing stockpiling flour? Like, not that many people bake. I don't think that many people actually bake, so I don't know what they're doing with it. Maybe they're making like paper mache glue or something to entertain their kids. I don't know, but yeah, it's been an interesting one. I mean, you know, even ourselves, we've a little bit, you know, like, but you know, we go to the supermarket every 3-4 days, and you just maybe throw in an extra can of something or a bag of rice or whatever it might be, you know. We've tried to really resist because they have said, look, just shop normal. And it's funny because the big supermarkets are completely packed and we have like a small convenience store around the corner and its shelves are totally packed. So, you know, it's no big deal. People just, yeah, getting in a panic, which is understandable in a lot of ways. It is kind of scary. So,
I was hoping that New Zealand was, like you say, stockpiling running shoes or... But toilet paper still mystifies me. But in the States, it's been the same. It is an interesting one. But rice, oats, that's the same thing here. I'm not sure about the canned peaches. Here's a heads up. I'll give you a quick report from the Burrell personal household. Is we just have bleach. So you mix 10 parts water to 1 part bleach in a Windex bottle, just a regular spray bottle, and you got sanitizer.
Yeah.
And so you don't need the stuff. Or hydrogen peroxide is as good as bleach.
Yeah.
And I keep one of those in the car, and I keep one of them at the house. And every time we walk in, of course, before you touch anything, we wash our hands. And then if I've gone to the supermarket, I actually take those clothes off and put them out in the sunroom and let them just chill out there for a few days. And I have different clothes inside the house. So we're kind of buttoned up here.
Yeah.
And there's inexpensive techniques. It just requires a lot of attention. But if one is an ultra runner, one is used to being methodical and detail-oriented. So I think all we need to do is just shift the gears in what we are detail-oriented about.
Yeah, I always think ultra running is just one big exercise in problem solving. And dealing with some sort of adversity or some sort of issue that you get in a race. So it's just like, well, you just kind of think along those lines, like you got to be flexible. It's who can adapt the best, you know, a lot of the time in a race, not necessarily who's the out and out fastest,
right?
Who can adapt and think on the fly. So there's a little bit of that, definitely. Yeah.
Right. And I'm doing a lot of walking on our paths here, and there's plenty of people on the paths. There's a lot of people on the paths. I keep 6 foot distance. Yeah. And so people said, wasn't that a little odd? Sure, it's odd. But heck, we're mountain runners. We're trail runners. We dodge rocks. We dodge roots. So now I just move around people. Yeah. I find it sort of interesting. Yeah. It kind of gives me something to do.
Yeah.
And then, if I may say so, I always say hello. These times like this, I think a good greeting and to be courteous is important.
It goes a very long way. You know, we have something, I'm trying to think where I heard it the other day, but, you know, everyone says, I don't know if you have the saying there is, you know, number one rule is don't be a dick. So, you know.
That's the number one
rule. Number one rule. And it kind of doesn't matter what, you know, what game you're playing, what you're up to, but. Just don't be a dick. And that's something like we definitely try to think, you know. So, yeah, you're out for a walk and you got to give someone a wide berth. And it feels really weird. Like it feels – because we are still allowed to exercise. I'm very – you know, we're allowed to go outside and exercise. So we've been for a walk today with the kids. And it was like, yeah, it was definitely – people were generally giving wide berths. It was a bit of a narrow trail at one section that we kind of had to hunch in. But, you know, then I seen two people that were clearly not – living in the same household running right next to each other. And you know, that was honestly, it was a little bit disappointing because they're yarning away and you're like, well, I'm going to ruin it for everyone. You know, like we're all in this together. We can't, you know, we can't do that. It's one thing if you're maybe running in proximity with someone, but it's another thing to be actually, you know, running along directly shoulder to shoulder, having a conversation. And that's hard for a lot of people because for a lot of people, the running is really a social part of it. You know, for me, I do most of my training by myself generally. I work from home by myself. You know, so this is actually not that big of a change. I love going to the, you know, going down to the local pub and having a beer with some friends. That's kind of been the change or will be the change, I guess. You know, that's kind of where I get my social interaction. But the training, the working, that's generally done you know, by myself. But for a lot of people, it will be really tricky. You know, I don't know. It's going to be a very interesting time. Hopefully they, I don't know, all, you know, they can listen to podcasts like this maybe or music or something to entertain themselves if they need that fix to get out on the tracks.
Right. And of course, the cyclists are using Zwift. Zwift is blowing up. Zoom, the online conferencing software, is blowing up. Their stock actually went up. That's Zoom. .us. And so some people are actually conducting book clubs. They still hold their monthly book club meeting. They just do it on Zoom. I think that's a very good idea.
Yeah.
Like you say, outside, it's okay. It's, you know, it's, you can converse from 6 feet away. That's just fine. And I personally think that exercise is good for your health. And as long as you obey the rules and don't be a dick, it's okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's critical, I mean, for people's mental well-being, I think. So, yeah, whatever
so
form that takes. Yeah.
Has New Zealand canceled all races? And if so, how far out?
Yeah. We're going pretty hard with the old canceling like everyone else. You know, I was going to run 100 miles this weekend, just gone, the Northburn 100 near Cromwell. And it's a small race. It's 270. So a week out from the race, Jacinda, our prime minister, said no events over 500. And the race was like, okay, well, it's well under 500. So we'll be sweet. And then on the Thursday before the race, they came out with no indoor events over 100 people. So then it was like, okay, it's outdoor. It's still well under. But by Friday night, the race director was, you know, he was really keen to push it on. But by then he just felt quite uneasy about the whole thing, understandably. And cancelled it, and that really was the right call. As disappointed and as what a lot of folks were, including myself, it was a good call. He didn't have to cancel it, but he did, so that was good. And pretty much most other races are. I know in Australia, UTA, which is I believe the second biggest trail running event behind UTMB, the Ultra Trail Australia, that's postponed, but they haven't given a date of when it will be. I had an email this morning from a race organizer up in Auckland who does the Xterra trail running series in Auckland, a series that we're sponsoring, and he thinks they'll probably do some races this winter, but you know they're not sure which ones, and they're not sure when they'll do them, whether they'll have to postpone or cancel the earlier ones, but they're still very hopeful of those kind of mid late winter ones, which is, I guess, July, August, September. But, yeah.
Are we going to see an FKT submission from you this weekend, Grant?
This weekend. I don't know about this weekend. I actually tried on Sunday when we originally talked about catching up. I went out. I had itchy feet, and I had to get out and do something. And I went and done. I was like, it's not going to be an FKT because it's not something that's kind of been, you know, an established route, but I thought it could be a future FKT if I could put this thing up. But by the time I got out there and I started a little bit late, and it just wasn't really working. But I've got a little loop that I'm maybe projecting that I'm working on to establish, which would be pretty fun. But you know, the next 4 weeks, I think I'll be playing it pretty close to home. We're in Christchurch nowadays, and right behind us we've got the Port Hills, which have some great trails on, so we'll get out and about there. I joked with a friend today that there is the Christchurch 360 trail, which is 130 kilometers, which takes in some beautiful trails, but then it takes in a whole lot of road. You know, it goes around the airport and stuff, but you know, whether people will be trying to do that, because it's kind of local. It's people can run it from their house sort of thing, this 130K loop or whatever it is. So it'll be interesting to see if people start trying to put some times up on that over the next few weeks. But, yeah, I imagine the FKT thing will start really taking off with all the events being cancelled. And I hope so, because it's –
Well,
yeah,
it has. So we're kind of buried here. We're getting probably a dozen submissions per day now. So it's coming in because FKTs are by nature solitary. Maybe it's one or two people. So it's good in that respect. At this point, I often the podcast say things like, you know, support your local FKT people because, you know, none of us get paid, et cetera. It takes a bit of work to put this whole thing together, but there's no way I'm going to say that now. Now what I'm going to say is support your local race director, support your local bar, your restaurant, your small business person. Because not only are they not getting paid, but they might not even be able to pay the rent. So please do what you can, take out food, things of that nature.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's going to be interesting here. I mean, even takeouts are closed down in New Zealand now. But, you know, I think when this lifts, I think there'll be a lot of people going and making sure those people are doing okay. I think they'll get a big bounce after this happens. So, yeah.
Grant, I look forward to staying in touch with you. And unfortunately, this is the worst part of the whole thing. It's too late to immigrate to New Zealand now.
You can't get in, man. The borders are well and truly locked down, man. You blew it. You should have stayed.
They wouldn't want me. That's a really good call.
You should have stayed when you were going for the last time, a few years ago. You shouldn't have left.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, too late. Grant, you sound terrific. I look forward to seeing you again in person.
Yeah, it definitely does. Hopefully here in Silverton, probably not this year, but maybe next year.